Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 6th of May, recording at 8:03 British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, the highlights on the day. And briefly, we have seen a bit of a catch-up rally by Japan, up 1.73% on the Nikkei stock average. It had been closed earlier this week due to the, I think it's the golden holiday or whatever they call it. And we have seen some quite lively action really following the jobs creation report from the U.S. More jobs were created than people were expecting. Actually, I know a number of people who are expecting the job creation figure to tank, and instead it surprised them on the upside. And that has some consequences. It pushed Wall Street from the minus column into the plus column, minus column pre-market, into the plus column, not substantially, but at any rate created a rally, suggesting that the overall technical rally that we have seen, which has been quite good this week, is not quite over. Now, why do I actually say that? Because investors chose to focus on the aspect of stronger U.S. economic growth, and therefore they're extrapolating from that better corporate profits, rather than to focus on the fact that if jobs are being created at a faster rate, then the economy is not slowing down as much as some people had expected, and therefore the Fed will have more reason to raise interest rates again. And remember, those expectations regarding interest rates had been reined right in. But not among bond investors, because the jobs creation figure has knocked the bonds in here today. It's also pushed up the dollar. And I maintain that while the dollar is going to range most of this year, that we still do not have any clear evidence that the technical rally, such as it is over. In other words, we could still see an additional technical rally in the U.S. dollar. And that has knocked back the precious metals in here today. Okay, now let's go back to the big picture long-term outlook, which I'm going to do swiftly because I really have dwelt on this at great length, and I've written a lot of copy on it. So, first point is that global stock markets, which are always under the influence of Wall Street, analysts have said for years that markets would be uncoupling. It's one of those hope springs eternal situations. It would be wonderful if markets did uncouple from Wall Street, because that would mean that, well, when Wall Street was in a bull trend, you don't mind if they all couple. But when Wall Street isn't and people are worrying about Wall Street, say hope springs eternal that some market is going to move independently and considerably higher. Well, it doesn't happen very often, and it hasn't happened recently. So Wall Street's overall trend is hugely influential. It creates a leash effect, as I've mentioned before, as in the dog walker's leash. When Wall Street is rallying or just ranging sideways, then that does open the door for other markets, or it extends the leash, to stick to my original analogy, and enables markets that are in favor to run, particularly emerging markets. Conversely, when Wall Street is declining and anxieties are increasing, then the leash is reined in, and those other markets are quite vulnerable and can even fall more than Wall Street as investors take fright, because those markets are thinner and they're generally higher beta. Now, Wall Street's secular bear market I define as not a generational long process of falling prices. I describe it as a generational long process of contracting PE ratios and rising dividend yields. Now, whether that causes, or whether that's created by GDP growth, or whether it's created by stock market weakness, depends a lot on the underlying global economic activity, which will depend a lot on the underlying liquidity conditions, and those liquidity conditions have been fairly ample here recently. Now, in terms of, I say recently, over the last number of years, global liquidity has been quite ample. Now, in terms of recent stock market action, and not just stock market action, in almost any market, it probably has not escaped your attention that this is a difficult period for making money. And sometimes there are easy periods to relatively easy periods to make money because we get persistent and clear trends. And there are other times when markets are really quite choppy and jittery. Now, why are markets choppy and jittery? Well, it's because investors are uncertain, and they're usually uncertain because they perceive change. They either see change occurring or they certainly perceive it, and not least when they look at their trading and investment statements. And that causes markets to and fro, often getting sharp short-term swings, and it is difficult to make money in those environments. Am I saying that it's difficult for me to make money in that environment? Yes, indeed I am. And I'm someone who's pretty used to making all of his spending money in the markets, usually on a monthly basis. I say that, I hasten to add, in no way as a boast. But, and I've been in this business for 38 years. It's what I do in terms of career and also a very serious hobby in terms of the actual investing. And so, with that experience, I mean, I really ought to know what I'm doing more often than not. Doesn't mean that it's easy. And part of the importance of experience is to know when to back off and also to know when to be fairly aggressive. And as I've said before, I think this is a time to back off because the risks are higher. The good news is that choppy, uncertain periods inevitably give way to fairly persistent trends up or down. And the not so good news is vice versa. We have always seen that good persistent trends eventually and inevitably give way to some choppy whipsaw trends. Now, the uncertainty and change in perceptions is really occurring because that nice, consistent 2-year stock market rally, consistent for the most part, particularly among emerging markets. The uptrend consistency has been broken. You will be able to look at all the charts of all the world's stock market indices in the subscribers chart library and check that out for yourself. The last holdouts are some of the Middle Eastern markets, but they've been kind of bid up on a Ponzi scheme, and it's a situation where eventually they hit an air pocket and move down quite sharply. But all the leading indices have broken their uptrend consistency, which is not all that surprising given the background of rising interest rates and some evidence that the pool of liquidity that has helped to fuel advances in so many asset classes is well, a little it's a little bit of the surplus has been drained off, and it can have a disproportionately large effect. Okay, so how do we actually play it in here right now? Well, I think generally cautiously, particularly if you're a long-only investor. If that's the case, it's not a bad idea to be mostly in cash, or certainly to lighten, preferably on rallies such as we're seeing at the moment. Now, if you are a two-way investor, then I am a two-way investor trader, and therefore I have a number of hedge short positions. And I'm looking to increase those hedge short positions, but I want to see this rally lose momentum and perhaps also be checked by some downward dynamics. And I also hold a number of long positions still. They are mainly in Asian emerging markets, a little bit of Japan, and also in top quality resource stocks and some funds to that effect. But I would lighten those positions if I get pleasantly surprised by the strength of the rally. I'd lighten some of them. And if I don't get pleasantly surprised by that strong a rally. I'm not going to give those positions away, but I would hedge more aggressively with asymmetrical shorts, asymmetrical, and then I would not be shorting India and Thailand, for instance. I would not be shorting an oil fund, but I would be shorting more of the US stock market indices and European stock market indices. Now, I have said before that I maintain that that two-year stock market rally, Wall Street-led rally that started in March of 2003, ended in April of 2003 for all intents and purposes, and that we're in a dangerous corrective period here. The debate, in my view, is really whether markets move down quickly or whether they get more sideways ranging activity. Well, the rally that we've seen over the last week and a bit certainly is more in line with the more sideways ranging and then down hypothesis. But I do feel that the main risk is to the downside. So in saying that there certainly is some empirical evidence from this rally that we'll get more ranging rather than just a persistent overall downward trend, I don't want to take that, or I don't want to become complacent about the downside risk because of that. And I also suspect that this technical rally that we have seen is nearly over. It certainly corrected the short-term oversold condition. Markets are not overbought on a short-term basis as such, but they're moving in that direction. Meanwhile, I said I'd been concerned in previous audios that some of my in-the-money stops on stock market, that my initial stock market futures positions might be triggered, and they weren't today or yesterday. But I'm still living a little bit dangerously if this rally continues a bit further, dangerously in the sense that those stops would be taken out, which would reduce my hedge short positions. And if the rally is on its last legs in here, as I suspect it is, then I might, the risk is that I would get stopped out near the highs of the rally and find myself either not getting back in or having to chase a declining market. But we'll see. And moving on to what about over the longer term period? Well, as I've said, we'll get, I think, this generational long process, which it could run easily into the year 2015, 2020, where yields continue to rise for the S&P. That's a very good thing. And PE ratios continue to fall as people realize they're not in the 1990s, and it's not a buy and hold environment. Now, when we do buy in a secular bear market environment, we want to be buying things after a shakeout, and preferably not only have they seen a shakeout, but they then begin to show some relative strength. And when they do very well, it's a good idea to lighten those positions or to at least protect them with trailing in the money stops. Buy and hold is no longer the opportune investment strategy. And I think overall, if you're saying, well, what sectors do I buy in this type of environment, you want to think in terms of when it's appropriate to buy, and I don't think it is right now. I think one wants to think in terms of companies that, or markets even, that would benefit from some sort of inflation in their profits. Now, resources I mentioned on the website are the classic example of where that actually applies. And you can appreciate that the resources have seen, commodity, natural, industrial resources have seen huge advances. Those can get pegged back a little bit, as we've seen with oil recently, but they're still much higher than they were a couple of years ago, for instance, as are the metals. And there are some shortages that exist as well, so that does give companies that are in those industries pricing power. Now, the opposite applies to, let's say, an automobile manufacturer, which is getting hit by the rising cost of steel and other components, but they are also in a ruthlessly competitive industry where there is oversupply, and so they have virtually no pricing power. As a matter of fact, they have to cut prices. So they're actually experiencing earnings deflation. General Motors, good example of that, Ford. But you can really say the same about just about all the automobile companies. Okay, moving on in here, my secular bull market themes and natural resources. So I will always be interested in those shares. But again, the danger periods are when they get overextended, and then they're going to see some quite sharp shakeouts, as we've seen recently. Emerging markets, particularly the Asian emerging markets, in my view, but the commodity-related emerging markets will also do very well. But these are not optimum times to be going into those markets, as you know. Perhaps if we get a further and significant shakeout, well, the bigger the shakeout, the more attractive markets will become, in my view. And that could set us up, if that happened over the next few months, that could set us up for quite a profitable period, say from sometime in October, September, October onwards, but we'll see. There'll be a lot of audios between now and then to assess this, which I do, of course, on an ongoing basis. Now, government bonds, secular bear market, but very much in the topping out phase. They have seen a very good medium-term rally recently. They've tended to move in terms of medium-term rallies and then somewhat swifter declines, all consistent with an overall topping out process. Bonds have, as I say, they've done very well in the last couple of months. And there's been a little bit of so-called flight to quality. I don't think there's much quality there in terms of the long-dated government bonds. The supply is absolutely enormous. The currencies are all susceptible due to additional credit creation. And the central banks have sown the seeds of a new inflationary cycle, as I've discussed at great length. So I don't like the sector. Prefer to play the short side. That's worked against me here in the short term, although I did cover one-fifth of my U.S. Treasury bond position on that last sell-off. Right now, the bonds, the government bonds, are mostly the rallies are looking tired, particularly the U.S. Treasuries down a point or so in here today, and I'm tempted to add to my short positions there. Moving on to the currencies, I've said that I see no compelling evidence that the US dollar has completed its technical rally. It could certainly move a bit higher as some more of those carry trades are wound out. Rising US short-term interest rates favor that script a bit. I do maintain that we've seen most of the secular bear market for the dollar in terms of price, not necessarily in terms of time. In other words, the bottoming out process, when it occurs, may really be quite lengthy. But I don't think we've seen the final lows, and I think we'll see the dollar index go back and eventually test and probably exceed somewhat the historic lows that we saw around that 1995 period, I believe. And it had touched the dollar index down in that sort of 78 to 80 region. We've seen a number of tests of that level. And in the, what, how am I actually playing it? Well, very, very lightly. I have a small hedge relative to what I'd had a few weeks ago. Small hedge long in the US dollar against the Japanese yen. And I've resisted the temptation to add to that position at somewhat better prices here today, despite my feeling that we could see the dollar move a little bit higher in here. But of course, I'm leaving the door open to possibly increasing that hedge position, not least because I have some precious metal positions, mainly futures positions, mainly silver, and some platinum. And if the dollar were to get another or to encounter another burst of short covering, causing the dollar index to push above that initial resistance around the 85.5 level, that would weigh on the precious metal prices in the short term. that additional dollar rally would create a wonderful buying opportunity in the metals, but those of us who hold them right now, as I say, would experience some profit erosion in terms of long-term positions or outright losses in terms of more recently acquired positions. Moving on to the precious metals, I maintain that it's a secular bull market. Ditto industrial metals, and ditto the energy contracts. And I expect these bull markets to really run for a very long time. They're punctuated by lengthy pauses and experience some sharp corrections. That's what occurs in even the best of long-term secular bull markets. They don't rise in a sort of linear fashion until usually the very end, when they go into the bubble sort of blow-off phase. And we're nowhere near that in terms of the end of the cycle. On a short-term basis, though, these markets are quite tricky, not least because of the dollar's rally, but because they'd push too far ahead. They are also suffering a little bit from some contraction in the amount of liquidity that was sloshing around the system. Hedge funds have become more nervous, so they've been reducing risk. These metals were also, and other commodities were also, a bit up on the carry trade, and so you can see that this corrective phase can continue to persist here overall. So again, it's a risky period in the short term. It's a very attractive area. It's a risky area in the short term, and possibly the medium term. It's a very, very attractive area on the long term. Overall, in terms of philosophy, I would want to be a buyer of these resources and their related stocks, the top quality stocks at any rate, following decent shakeouts. As far as the stocks are concerned, particularly if it's an overall favorable environment for equities, unfortunately, that's not the case. March 2003 through April 2005, that was a very attractive period for equities. I maintain, as you know, that this is not currently an attractive period for equities. Agricultural commodities, historically cheap, but really it's the weather that's the key variable for those commodities. And therefore, they're hard to predict on a long-term basis. But the fact that they are at historically low prices does mean that they're always worth a speculative punt after a downside shakeout. And I think I've probably run on enough here for all of you at this stage. Don't wish to abuse by going on for too long. So I'll just wish you all a spectacular weekend.